Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Field Pass. This is Dan. I have Mikey and John joining me today to talk a little bit about the Iowa football game, as well as interview Mike LaTulip here in a little bit. Big game this weekend. Illinois kind of coming off a bye week, not necessarily one that they had planned. But Mikey, from your experience, you know, talk a little bit about the bye week and preparing yourself with that extra time.
Yeah, bye weeks are usually my favorite, you know, time of the year, because usually they fall about, you know, somewhere halfway between the season. So you've been grinding it out, you know, if you include camp, 10 straight weeks, you know, without a Saturday or Sunday off. So it's always nice to get that rest. But this one was obviously different because the Ohio State game was canceled, 9:45 the night before the game?
Yeah.
11th hour, yeah.
Yeah, so generally when you have a bye week, you usually practice that Monday, maybe Tuesday, and then you're off Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. You'll have like off in terms of no practice. You'll still have films and do all that, you know, off the field stuff, maybe hit the weight room. But in terms of, you know, putting that pressure on your body, you know, being able to get the aches and pains, the soreness away, they didn't really have the chance to do that last week because, you know, the game was canceled so last minute. But still, you know, not playing a game on Saturday, I'm sure those guys are going to be extremely rested and ready to go.
Do you think they maybe made it like a quasi bye week? Maybe taking, okay, we have Saturday off, let's take Sunday and Monday off as well, just to see if, you know, it has some of the positive effects that usually you feel after a bye week with maybe guys' bodies recuperating a little bit?
Yeah, maybe they did. You know, I could see Coach Smith doing that. Nearly called him Lovey there.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, I know. No, I could see him doing that because, you know, he is a player's coach. He's always looking out for the guys. But ultimately, you know, had those seniors or the leaders on the team, if they had went to Coach Smith and said, hey, Coach, we think, you know, we would benefit well if we had, you know, Monday off. Because usually we would have Sunday off games. So I'm almost guaranteed that they already had Sunday off. But if those guys went to him and said, hey, coach, you know, our bodies are still sore, maybe we just do a film day Monday. And, you know, there's a chance that he gave it to them off. But, you know, as you've probably heard in some of his interviews, you know, the program runs through him and he ultimately gets the final decision.
Here's a question that I've been thinking about, like, how much time do you need to prepare for an opponent? And at what point does that cap hit? So if, let's say Illinois got a month to prepare for the first game of the year. Like, you don't need a full month to prepare for a team. So you're eventually going to go out and play. But, like, does having 2 weeks make a big difference than having 1 week? Or is it pretty similar once you get to a certain point?
You know, I feel like in terms of practicing the plays, to me, I never felt a strong difference between, you know, 1 week or 2 weeks. I think where you find the most beneficial or where you gain the most advantage is definitely on the mental side of things. You know, so when you're out at receiver, for example, just being able to recognize little tendencies, because, you know, you have 2 weeks to watch film versus 1 week when you're trying to cram everything in. So you just have that extra time to really study the defender, or, you know, if you're a defensive back, study the receiver, you know, double the amount of time you normally do. So I think the real advantage comes with the off the field stuff, which, you know, ultimately does translate, you know, the following Saturday when you're on the field.
And maybe they did the inverse of what I had just suggested, where, you know, oh, we got Saturday off, and they maybe, because of how big this game is, you know, if the Ohio State cancellation kind of presents an interesting opportunity. Forfeiture.
Can we speak on that for a bit? Because I saw they did not meet the, so I guess it's all based on data, right? If games get canceled and it's a certain number of scholarship players or total team that is out with COVID or contact tracing, the game is canceled, right? I read that they did not meet those numbers. Unless you guys read something different, how is that not considered a forfeit? I get it's Ohio State. They're the golden child of the Big Ten, but, like, come on. You got to play the game.
It sounds kind of like, to be quite honest, what Wisconsin might have done as well, where, okay, once Graham Mertz is not our starting quarterback, you know, it might just be better to fold a couple games and have them not count against us instead of, you know, disclosing exactly how many COVID guys we did or did not have and possibly lose some games where we probably could have fielded a team. So I don't, I didn't read anything adverse to what you said, Mikey, but yeah, it wouldn't surprise me if they were like, all right, we're not going to risk, you know, losing to Illinois and having that on our resume, you know, as much as we love our boys in orange and blue. We definitely might think of them a little bit more highly than the national media does. And if the national media says like, oh yeah, you know, they lost to Illinois, they're not going to maybe see the nuance of, all right, they had, you know, third and fourth stringers going because of COVID.
Yeah. I feel bad for the guys like the Kendrick Greens, the Jake Hansons, where, you know, they're seniors this year and you make money. You make money on playing teams like Ohio State and going out there and having great games. So just for them, you know, for the game to have been able to have been played and not, you know, I feel for those guys who've, you know, been working their ass off.
Yeah.
Yep. But it does, like I was saying, pose an interesting opportunity for the season as a whole, because so we obviously don't have our non-con schedule, but now it's kind of like, okay, if we win against Iowa, then we could have a chance at a winning record, which is, you know, if you take it, I saw Robert tweet about this, you know, in the math of the season, you'd think, okay, we do well against the non-con schedule and we probably lose to Ohio State. So maybe this could be a representation of, you know, if we come out 4-3 going into our week 9 game, then all right, you know, this has some signs of life.
Yeah, when there's a team that's a 28-point favorite against you, I don't think, you know, you miss that opportunity. You wish you have the chance to maybe upset that team. But at the same time, when you look back at the record at the end of the year, I think, you know, Illinois will kind of be happy that that was a cancellation and that they didn't have an extra tick in the loss column this season.
Yeah, I think, you know, when especially, you know, from Coach Smith's, you know, from his standpoint, he's in year 5 of a rebuild and you can't be getting thrashed by teams on Saturday. So, you know, Ohio State, they could do that to you. You know, it could have went one or two ways. Either, you know, we upset them, you know, very, very unlikely, but we do that, or, you know, we just get the brakes beaten off us. So I'm sure there were some happy people in the facility.
Yeah, and mentally too, you come off 2 wins and then you go play Ohio State and you get beat by 50. Come Iowa, you're like, you know, who is this team? And you don't quite have that momentum. Whereas if you skip Ohio State and you're still kind of riding those 2 wins momentum, that might help them this week.
Yep, and it might help with the overall context of the season in terms of, Mikey, like you were saying, you can't be getting blown out in year 5. And all right, Wisconsin week 1, you know, usually getting tuned up against non-cons, but you get your doors blown off. That's, you know, hopefully excusable at the end of the season. If we look back and if we get a win against Iowa and Northwestern, then okay, you know, maybe it was one of those where we just came out flat against Wisconsin, then we didn't have our starting quarterback against Purdue and Minnesota. And even though, you know, the Minnesota game got out of hand, you never want that happening regardless, but maybe that can be explained away. And then, you know, Ohio State not being on the schedule, we can all write our own assumptions, but keeps in line with expectations of what we already had. So then it gets really to the games that you want to be evaluating, like the Iowas, like the Northwesterns that are coming up, and those will be great tests. So I'm definitely super excited to see. And I feel like I know I'm more optimistic than Vegas going into this Saturday's contest.
Yeah. I'm loving our matchup, you know, this weekend against the Hawkeyes. You know, I think Iowa, you know, is not the strongest offense. You know, I think their defense, though, as we know, is pretty stellar. It usually is every single year. But, you know, Iowa's a team where you know going into it what they're going to do. Very similar to like a Wisconsin. You know they're going to have the pro-style offense, you know, play the cover 2 shell in the secondary and, you know, just try to go out there and beat you with guys that were molded into their system. So it's going to be a big test, though. You know, I don't even know when was the last time we beat Iowa. It's been years. I never did it in my playing career, and I don't think we've done it since. So it's been at least 6 years, 7 years, actually. So big test by the boys this week, and it's a win you need for this program in year 5, like we spoke about.
Dare I say it's a battle of the two hottest Big Ten West teams? Iowa coming off 4 straight wins, Illinois coming off 2. Something's got to give.
Team win.
Yeah, something's got to give.
unstoppable force meets a movable object.
That's right.
Which one are we?
Who's to say?
Yeah, I mean, for as much as like this Iowa team, I Mike, you were talking about how they're a rock of they're a model of consistency. I think that there is some regression. As much as I did not love Nate Stanley, I don't know how he's in the NFL. I think it's just this guy's big. He can throw the ball fairly well, but I was never a fan of his. I don't think Spencer Petras is anything as of an upgrade at all. He might. I think he would be a significant downgrade in my opinion. And I think that the boys, you know, handled the Iowa team fairly well last year. So
yeah.
I think that it can be one of those where they come out and they surprise because they take advantage of some poor quarterback play.
Yeah, John, don't be giving them bulletin board material with that.
Yeah, seriously. They're going to type that out and hang that all over the away
field. Listen, I think I gave the most bulletin board material to Nate Stanley out of anyone. So, I mean, maybe – I don't know where he's at right now. I think he got either late-round draft pick or undrafted. Maybe the Broncos need him or something like that. He gets up and he just lights up the scoreboard and puts out a tweet, a big F you to me. But yeah. You know, listen, I'm collecting grudges at this point that are completely one-sided and made up by me between, what is it? It's Milo and then the offensive line and now Nate Stanley, Spencer Petras. Everyone wants to beat my ass.
So John, tell us what changes going from game planning for Justin Fields to game planning for Spencer Petras.
A lot. I don't really know how much more I can get into it, but I mean Justin Fields probably arguably the best quarterback in college football. I know that there will be some people who in one of the Death Valleys think that it's Trevor Lawrence, but I mean Justin Fields is right up there, and Spencer Petras. I'm not quite seeing the comparisons. So he's a much more inconsistent passer. Definitely not a threat to run. I think that he can be a little leaky in terms of the turnover game and the potential, especially for a Coach Lovie Smith defense. You know, they can get after. I'm hoping we see another +5 graphic on the tweeted out from the official Twitter account because. I do think that they're a much more disciplined team, but I still think that Petras has got that leaky tendency. He just feels like a guy when he's dropping back and I'm like, he's about to throw the ball. And obviously, you know, if you're usually how I do it, I watch the line play. And then, you know, after a certain point, you can tell when it's about to crescendo into a pass. And so you obviously can't see where the receivers are because of the way the broadcast is. So, you know, watching so much football, you have get these instincts over time. And he's the kind of guy who, when I'm watching him throw a football, I'm like, there is no way that this is going to be an absolute dime piece. Sometimes it is. And then I'm obviously wrong, but even, you know, the Illini defense in terms of the passing game hasn't been great this year. We all know that, but he's still a guy when he's taking his drop back or taking a snap from the shotgun, I'm not thinking, all right, you know, this is going to be a Graham Mertz style dissection of the boys.
Yeah. Iowa's so interesting to me in that it seems like every year it's the same thing. It's power run, and then a play action pass. And then they're going to play really good defense and, you know, limit you and try to win a low scoring affair. So I'm curious this week after, you know, a week of planning for Nebraska with a running quarterback, and then you're seemingly going to play Justin Fields. That didn't end up happening, but a couple mobile quarterbacks and then switching over to a more traditional powerhouse Big Ten team. How's Illinois going to look this week?
It'll be interesting to see. You know, thankfully we are coming off that not playing a game last week. So hopefully they're, you know, rested up, bodies are feeling good, but it's going to come down to turnovers. I feel like I say that every week, but this team thrives when we can force turnovers, and Iowa's a very disciplined team. So we can't go out there and beat ourselves. We can't have, you know, the Owen Carney hands to the face on 3rd and 20 when we're down by 6 points in the fourth quarter. We just can't have those little mistakes where we go out there and beat ourselves, because Iowa will capitalize on it and they're not going to beat themselves. So we got to go out there and beat them. And, you know, I think with Brandon Peters getting into his rhythm, we saw against Nebraska, feeling confident, Bebe over the top, you know, that get that running game going. I think, you know, we could shock a lot of people this weekend.
And I think the Coach Lovie Smith defense matches up well against these types of programs. We saw it last year with Wisconsin. even how they fared against the Iowa offense last year. I think it's one of those where when you have that more pro style approach where it's, okay, we don't quite have the mobile quarterback who's a threat to run every single play, whether it be RPO or just a straight read option. You know, you have that power run with the tandem backfield or maybe a fullback or something like that. I think that this defense matches up better against that. So hopefully, you know, we see the boys put out a good effort, and it's not just, you know, we've said it before, and we saw it with the Nebraska game where it wasn't just the takeaways, but it was also then coupled with the just great performance by the defense overall in terms of limiting yards and third down efficiency for the opposing team. Stuff like that is what we'll be looking for the Illini defense to capitalize on.
Do we need to talk about Blake Hayes this week?
Yes, Blake Hayes for MVP. I tweeted that out 2 weeks ago. I truly believe it. We saw he was on a rival podcast, the Pat McAfee Show.
Big rival. Ours.
Big rival. We're in the same playing field as he is.
I can't believe Pat got him before us.
I know.
We were texting Pat, and we couldn't believe that he pulled that wool over our eyes.
I know. He was talking some shit to us, but it's all good. We enjoy Pat's show.
We got 42 degrees this weekend and partly sunny. 2:30 start on FS1 in Champaign. A little south wind blowing here early December. Mikey, what do you think?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The wind is always a swirling in there. 42, though, that's not bad for a December kickoff, especially in Champaign. It's a lot warmer than I thought it was going to be. So I know all the guys, especially everybody from Florida on the team is super happy that it's somewhat warm out.
Do those guys, when they're in the locker room, do they just put on like every layer of Nike,
I know what you're saying. Gear? It's hilarious. Like whenever there's like freshmen, and it's, you know, their first like cold practice, cause they've never practiced in the cold. Freshmen from like a warm state, Texas, California,
got a lot of those
Florida
guys.
Yeah. They will wear like sweatshirts, sweatpants, and I'm
hoodies
like,
under
like,
their helmet.
I'm like, just wear something that'll keep you semi-warm because your body's going to heat up. I think you add like 25 degrees to body temperature. It's something that your body will heat up and you feel warmer than it is, obviously. And you always see the guys like midway through practice, like peeling layers off because they're sweating too much. So it's definitely an adjustment, you know, if you haven't played in it before.
Do you, on the sideline, do you have those heaters for like the helmets, or do you stand next to the turbine? What was your move to stay warm when you're on the sideline? The big coat?
Yeah. So actually my freshman year, we did not have the heated benches. All we had was like that like blowtorch. And I would always stand by that when I'd come off the field, cause I would just be freezing. And I remember Ohio State came to Champaign, I believe my sophomore year, and they brought heated benches. Oh. Like they brought their own heated benches, and we were sitting on like stadium bleachers. And I remember Tim Knox, he came to me and was like, "You see that?" He's like, "They brought their own heated benches." And this was when
that's a game changer.
They just came off their national championship season, so you know,
probably they engraved with their championship. You know,
oh yeah. So then I think we ended up getting those like a year or two later. But once we got those, I would just sit on those because it just blows hot air. You can put your helmet on the little stick that keeps it warm. And then they even have a place where you slide your hands in like underneath the seat. So it keeps your hands warm too. Yeah, they really think of anything. And then, well, I'm ranting right now, but there's like so it sits on like a little platform that's maybe like an inch or two thick. And the platform's got little holes in it that just shoots up hot air. So if you're over there, it's like you're sitting at the beach.
You're in
the
sauna.
75 and sunny out. Yeah.
You're like, I need to get off the field offense. Let's score real quick so I can go back and sit on the heated bench.
Yeah.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong. Maybe field turf technology has changed since I played. But I feel like I remember reading that the field turf with the rubber pellets, when it's sunny out, can get like 5 to 10 degrees warmer on the field than like the listed temperature. So if, you know, it's 40 degrees, you know, maybe it's up to 45 or 50. I don't know if you experienced that or if the guys will be out there thinking that, but
I think
I remember that being a thing.
Yeah, that's definitely a thing. but the sun's got to be out. So if the sun's out, especially in the summertime, you know, it gets a lot more than 5 or 10 degrees hotter. It gets pretty hot out there. But yeah, you know, once you get running around and once you get moving, it
doesn't even matter.
Yeah, until you come off the field. When you're just standing on the sidelines, it's not the best. But when you're out there playing, you don't even notice it.
Do you have PTSD from the black pellets, just like being in every crevice and every, you know, sock you've ever had?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I used to get the worst, like turf burns.
Oof. Little raspberries.
Yeah. And the worst part about those is you'd like get tackled in a game or get tackled in practice, and you would just see it. You would see like a streak that's like 3 inches long, 2 inches wide, like on your forearm, not fully bleeding through, but you could just see it's like burnt almost. And you know, the next few days, it's just going to start hurting bad, hurt whenever you put water on it. So it's not fun. Those little black pellets are not my favorite thing.
Did you ever rock the like that tape that sometimes guys will wear from like the back of their triceps all the way to their wrist?
Yeah, no, I've seen that on I can't even think of Alvin Kamara. Mm-hmm. I think he was kind of the one who pioneered that. But I see it and I'm like, dang, like I wish I would have done that. It's a cool looking look.
Weren't you a long sleeve guy for a little bit, or were you never on the long sleeve? No way.
You always got to show the guns.
That's right. Yeah. Like an O lineman, those guys, when it's like 0 degrees out, they don't care. They're just like, I'm tougher than that.
Well, I know Coach Buckus, our old offensive line coach, the O line could not wear sleeves.
That was a rule.
Yeah, it's like a point of pride. No, I remember sleeves. Yeah, I mean, that was even like bringing it all the way back to high school football. Like junior, I would wear like long sleeves, and like looking back at that, I was kind of pissed at myself, because then senior, the only time I did.
It's not a football guy move, John.
Exactly. But the only time I did was when we were playing on like, you want to talk field turf? We were playing on AstroTurf, where it was like an inch thick, like, and underneath carpet. It was carpet on top of concrete. Mm-hmm. And I didn't have any like the sweet Alvin Kamara tape. So I just wore my like long sleeve Under Armour. Cause I mean, it was also colder, but I had played in colder weather with short sleeves on, and I didn't really care. But you can't be having like the rug burn or even like bruising and stuff because you're falling on straight concrete essentially. So
yeah,
that's one of those where, yeah, it's like it's a very football guy thing to make sure that you're not wearing any sleeves. So I'm not surprised that Luke Buck was about that life too.
See, I was the softest little quarterback. I was wearing the long sleeves, and I had the hand warmer too on my back that, you know, put the hands in there in between plays. So call me a diva, but that's the style I went with back in the day.
Yeah, you look like the diva type of player, Dan.
You know it.
I'm kidding.
But I wasn't sitting on heated benches like Mikey Dudek, so.
I know. Well, that was only for like a year or two. Other than that, I was just sitting on the bleachers.
That's right. Cold helmet in hand.
Man, yep. Imagine if the boys go out and like win a national championship. What kind of sick. Mike, you'll have to come back and somehow find some extra eligibility when you're like, you know, 35 or something like that.
You got a year, right?
I got a lot of years, but speaking of that, like they built that new facility, it was finished the year I left. Talk about bad timing. Like, I can't even get spring ball in there. Like, just give me something in there, right?
We'll have to do the field pass. We'll have to do a field trip to the new, maybe play some mini golf, see who's got the best score.
You already know
who's the best bowler.
Yeah. No,
Mike, you got some connections still, right?
Yeah. We'll make it happen, but no, that we can maybe save it this talk for another episode. But that facility is sick. It's unreal. We'll definitely get a trip up there.
Let's get into player predictions for the week. Mike, you want to kick things off?
Yeah.
Picks of the week.
I told you guys I was gonna go with one person, and then I told you I was gonna go with someone else. I'm gonna go with the first person. I'm gonna go Nate Hobbs.
Okay.
Look for Nate to have a big game. You know, we've been waiting on that breakout game.
Praying on it.
I know. So look for him to lock down on the outside and do his thing and show us, you know, what type of ball player he is. Nate Hobbs. Sorry, Nate.
How many how many tackles for losses? How many forced fumbles, interceptions?
How many pass breakups? That's my Mikey Dudek specific stat of the week. How many pass breakups for one Nate Hobbs?
Ooh. I'm going to go one pass breakup. He's going to give up 3 catches, one pass deflection, and 7 tackles.
All right.
Love it.
There's Mikey Dudek's oddly specific line of the week.
I love it.
John, who you got?
I'm going to go back to the well because I didn't get to use him. And I'm almost glad because it's a type of revenge game for Brandon Peters. And, you know, I think we all were a little miffed and certainly pissed off when we saw that there was no targeting call last year that knocked him out of the Northwestern game, not only the rest of the Iowa game. But I mean, if BP 18 is getting it rocking, then, you know, the boys are going to hopefully go out there and get a W. And I think that besides a matchup against Michigan, maybe in week 9, this is probably one of the games that he's looking most forward to so that he can get a little revenge against that cheap shot. And hopefully he goes out there and, you know, I try to get oddly specific last week. I'm not going to try and do that this week because I think he's just going to go out there and ball out. And hopefully, you know, the running game helps supplement that as well. So, but I think he's still going to be the difference maker and he'll have a couple, you know, late touchdowns in the third and fourth quarter to put the boys over the top.
We need that.
All right, Dan, what you got?
Got to go with special teams ace, Alec McCarron. No, I do think he's going to have a good game. He's been kind of a significant piece to the special teams, but...
And could get some tick with, we heard officially that Tariq Barnes had some type of surgery. Obviously, Lovey's not going to get specific with it, but yeah. he might. Alec, I incorrectly said Alex McCarron in the last podcast. So
can't do that. Respect that man.
I was going to say, I knew right when it happened too. Like I made some, obviously no one can see it, but I made some like wild gesture because I was so pissed off at myself because I knew right as it escaped my mouth. I was like, this is another guy that can just line me up and kick me in the crotch.
No, I think he is going to have a good game, but that's not going to be my actual pick. Actual pick is going to be, I think I'm going to go Luke Ford. I think we've been waiting for Luke to have a breakout game, and who better to do it against than Iowa, a team of many NFL tight ends, present and future. So if there's ever a time for a tight end to step up and have a big game, I think this is the week for Luke Ford. So I'd like to see Brandon spread the ball around, you know, maybe gash him up the middle a few times and get Luke Ford into the mix.
Yeah, he's had some pretty crazy blocks. He's a good blocker out on the perimeter. So it'd be nice to get him some touches, see what the number one tight end in the country coming out of high school can do.
Yeah.
And you'd love to see that too. Just like a guy that's staying engaged, even though he's obviously not getting the touches that, I mean, anytime you're that highly touted recruit, you probably want them. So, but I mean, he's still going out there and he's laying some wood and you know that he looks like he's a guy who likes doing that because he'll stare a guy down after he does it too. So, you know, hopefully at the very least, you know, he can keep that mojo going and maybe make some impact blocks on some big runs.
All right. Let's get into the game predictions real quick. I'll turn it over to Mikey first. Let's see. I think Iowa is a 13.5-point favorite, over-under set at 51. So they're not predicting a very high-scoring game, you know, predicting Iowa by a couple scores. Who do you got this week, Mikey, and why is it Illinois?
Oof, dang. I'm going Illinois 31, Iowa 28.
Okay.
And it's going to be here's what's going to happen, all right? It's going to be 28-24 Iowa. We're going to get the ball in the fourth quarter with about 6 minutes left in the game. We're going to drive 70-ish yards and score a touchdown with about a minute on the clock, kick the extra point, give the ball back to Iowa, and we're going to go home three-point win. Sorry, I fumbled my words there. But no, I think we're going to win the turnover battle, which is important week in and week out. I think Brandon Peters is going to have a really good game, and I think our defense is going to step up, and the playmakers, the leaders of our team, you know, Jake Hansen, Owen Carney, Nate Hobbs, those guys are going to step up and do their thing and lead us to victory.
Listen, I've given the it's a double-edged sword, because if we got the Iowa football team listening to our podcast, and obviously we're probably surpassing our rival Pat McAfee at that point then. But yeah. I, as we know, I am not high on Spencer Petras. I do not think that the Iowa offense is going to be able to put up enough points. I'm predicting 24-10, the boys in orange and blue going out there and getting a win. Like I said, so I'm not to get as oddly specific as Mikey, but I think it'll be like 17-10 going into half. And then Coach Lovey Smith defense making their second half adjustments like they do, only giving up a field goal, you know, eating up the clock on offense. Brandon Peters, like I said, throwing those touchdowns to make an impact. And, you know, I feel as good. Usually when I make these predictions, if I'm feeling the Illini win, I'm like, I don't know. Like, maybe it's just my fandom talking. I have a firm feeling.
Dude,
I don't believe in Spencer Petras. I don't think that he is going to beat this team. I know that they've had issues. I know that the pass defense hasn't been great. We've made everyone look like Heisman contenders. I understand that, but I do not think that he is actually going to be able to go out there and carve it up. That's just me, though.
Hey, if you're telling me Iowa's only scoring 10 points, sign me up for that. Lock me into that, and I feel pretty good about that. All right, you want my prediction? I'm going to go. Maybe. I'm riding the I'm just going to keep riding my momentum of betting against Illinois because it seems to be working. Who'd we beat? We beat Rutgers. I was saying we were going to lose that. We won it. I said we were going to lose to Nebraska. We won that. And I said we were going to lose to Ohio State, and we didn't lose that. So I'm riding Iowa. You guys want me to ride Iowa. I'm going 24-21, bad guys.
Am I the only realist on this podcast? Am I the only one who's hashtag keeping it real? Mikey just picking Illinois in every single game. Dan picking against Illinois in every single game.
Right.
I'm the only one out here putting my...
putting it all on the line?
Putting it out there, risking my reputation, my gold standard reputation, and picking a side that could or could not happen.
Somebody's got to do it.
That's the take game for you.
All right, so big game on Saturday, 2:30 start in Champaign against the Hawkeyes. We'll be tuned in. Let's talk a little bit of basketball. We're actually going to kick it over to an interview with Mike Latulip up here. Mike was kind enough to join us, give us his thoughts on the Baylor game, as well as, you know, some former player stories and things like that. So we'll kick it over to Mike. We now welcome on a very special guest, former Illini guard, Mike Latulip joins us. Mike, thanks for joining us.
Appreciate you boys having me on, man.
Mike, would you give us a little bit of an update? What are you up to? Where are you at? What's going on with Mike Latulip?
Yeah. Well, currently right now I'm in Nashville, Tennessee. My parents actually moved down here in June of 2019. So, you know, I'm down here visiting right now, and currently my fiance and I, we live in Austin, Texas. Moved down there shortly after we got engaged, which was in May of 2019. And, so I'm working for a startup recruiting agency. It's like a 6-person company right now, but essentially what we do is, you know, I'm helping get, you know, software engineers and different, you know, whether it's marketing roles, but I'm helping these candidates find roles at these startup companies in Austin. As you know, Austin's kind of a tech hub, similar to Silicon Valley, but, you know, I guess a Silicon Valley junior, if you will. They call it Silicon Hills. I don't know if you knew that.
Yeah.
But so we're partnering with a lot of these startup companies that want to grow and expand and kind of up their employee count. So, that's my life now. I don't want to get too far into it because you guys will probably fall asleep, but I'm enjoying it, man.
So Mike, yeah, thank you again for coming on. You know, obviously a huge basketball game last night, you know, for the Illini, probably, you know, the biggest one in, you know, 10 plus years that we've had on a national time slot on ESPN. Huge game, a lot of build up to it. Obviously not the outcome, you know, we wanted with that, but what were some of your takeaways from that game now that, you know, you've been able to sleep on it and kind of, you know, digest it a little bit?
Well, first things first, Baylor's a heck of a team. You know, I watched them a bunch last year, and they really are a very similar team. I know you guys and I talked about this before, but that's a team that won 23 straight games last year with a very, I don't want to say senior laden group, because a lot of those guys are actually juniors, but they're upperclassmen. And a couple of those guys, Jared Butler, like to me, I think Jared Butler's a guy that could be in an NBA rotation like tomorrow. Mm-hmm. He's so solid defensively. He's so steady offensively. He can shoot the ball. He can do just about everything. And I think the one thing that you can take away from that game, amongst a lot of things, is that, you know, aside from maybe Adam Miller's shooting night, those freshmen were ready. And I think that's something that bodes well for the future, for one. And two, you know, you played the number two team in the country about as tough as you could. And Io, Kofi, and Adam Miller, who arguably are your three best players, didn't play well. And that's something that I think you can look at as a positive. You can look at it as a negative because it ended up affecting the game, but you can look at it as a positive where, hey, we can get these guys all on the same page and clicking on all cylinders. You know, you can beat any team in the country. So there were a lot of things that I thought that they did extremely well last night. There were a lot of things last night that, you know, like Trent Frazier can't have five turnovers. Like, can't, he just happen. Can't. And to be honest, he doesn't handle the ball enough to justify five turnovers. So there's little things like that obviously need to be shored up on. But I was really encouraged with a lot of those younger guys. You know, Adam Miller, I know he didn't shoot the ball well, but the dude had one turnover in 31 minutes against arguably the best defensive team I've seen in my 26 years of existence at the college level. So that's another positive takeaway. And you can go on down the line with all these – with all the younger guys. But I continue to just be blown away by Andre Curbelo. And I don't know if it's kind of a matter of time before he starts getting towards the 25 to 30 minute a game mark. Mm-hmm. Because he's starting to learn the defense a little bit, and that's what's going to allow him to play 25 to 30 minutes. Because right now when he's in the game offensively, the ball hops, the ball's moving. Everything is a lot more fluid. I thought Io last night at times was a little more dependent on isolation, and when he didn't have anything going, you know, calling for a ball screen from Kofi, and that's great for Io and Kofi, but there's three other guys on the floor that become stagnant. So those were kind of things that I initial takeaways that I looked at, and luckily between the Ohio game and this game. A lot of things that you can take away from the film, and things that you want to get shored up in early December, as opposed to, you know, middle of Big Ten play in February.
Yeah. Looking forward from a game against Baylor, where you're going up against, like you said, one of the most experienced teams with still some great talent, but then going to a more inexperienced team in Duke, who still is going to have, you know, loads of talent regardless. What would you say is your biggest adjustment you would make from one game to the next?
Yeah, I think the one thing that that people, you know, it's somewhat of a misnomer where, you know, okay, here's what you got to do against Baylor, and then you play UT Martin. Okay, here's what you got to do against UT Martin. Okay, now we're going to play this way against Duke. There are subtle adjustments that you have to make from game to game, but the really good teams, and I know Coach Underwood is going to preach this, the really good teams have their cornerstones. They have their pillars. They have, this is what we do every game, you know, X, Y, Z. And it doesn't matter who we're playing, we're going to do that, as opposed to completely altering the game plan every single game. Cause then what are you really getting good at? So that's something that, that's what I would caution this Illinois team from doing is getting on that roller coaster of like, okay, we play Baylor, and now we're going to play, you know, okay, we play UT Martin now. Okay, now we play Duke. And it just has to be consistency in what you're doing, whether that's the type of offense you run. And there's going to be certain adjustments like, hey, you know what, let's get into Kofi. We have an advantage. Those little things. But in terms of game plan, you have to have your pillars and your cornerstones of like, we're going to dive on every loose ball. We're going to play harder than you. We're going to defend. And we're going to make sure we're taking high percentage shots on the offensive end. And all of that should remain uniform, you know, no matter who you're playing. And that's what I think when you look at this Duke team, you know, with a lot of these Duke teams over the years, it's younger guys that are a little more talented. But I think that actually plays into Illinois' hands a little bit, because if you can bring the toughness and if you can bring the tenacity and the full 40 minutes of playing hard. I thought last night, you know, you see a really good team in the country, 36 minutes of playing hard. It's not enough. Like, it's just not enough. So you have to have those, that consistent effort from everybody that comes into the game. So I guess that's my long way of saying, you know, you have to have those things that you can carry with you every single game, because that's how you build consistency. That's how you build an identity. And you know, I think they're starting to build towards that. You know, we've only had four games this year, and you just feel like after the game, you've learned so much more about this team. And I think they're learning that too. And that's why I'm excited for these next couple games, because I think even though in a loss last night to Baylor, this team took a step forward.
Speaking of, showing that toughness out there, I think I saw a little bit from Coleman Hawkins that I was very impressed with, that we didn't necessarily see in the first few games. And he even got in there before Jacob Grandis in this game, which was a little bit surprising to me, but he seemed to back it up out there. What did you see from the young freshman out there, Coleman Hawkins?
I saw a kid that in a top five matchup on ESPN, and granted, things are a little bit, I want to say things are a little bit different because there's not, a huge crowd,
right.
But you saw Baylor's bench. I mean, they're still getting into it. They're yelling, and I could see how that could be intimidating for a freshman. But man, that dude was ripping the ball out of guys' hands and making the hustle plays, blocking shots. And I've always said, if you're going to be the eighth or ninth guy, you have to do those things, and you have to be okay with doing most of the times only those things. And that's what I thought Coleman Hawkins did last night. And I think it's a feather in his cap because, when you look at Underwood, that's a guy that he can now say, you know what, no matter how big the game is, no matter how young this kid is, I know I can trust him. And that's invaluable for a young guy with a team that already has a lot of talented players and a lot of guys that already play hard and do those little things. To have another guy that can add to that, it's huge. Like, you don't want drop off, in terms of toughness and tenacity as you go down your bench. Like, that's something that should remain the same, no matter who you throw in there. So I was really impressed with him. And granted, there's moments where, there's like the chicken with the head cut off moments for every freshman. But I thought for him last night, he didn't look like a deer in the headlights. When he ripped the ball out of that guy's hands, like, that's just not a play that a lot of kids make at that age in that moment. They're more kind of reactive. Okay. Like, I'm not going to set the tone. I'm going to see what happens. I may get punched first and then I'll figure out how to react. Like, he took it to those guys last night. I know we only played 5 minutes, but, it was a damn good 5 minutes.
Oh yeah.
I think that was the most surprising and encouraging moment of the game. Like, in terms of a macro thing, just seeing him somehow come down with like an offensive board when he's going up against a team that is, proven to be physical and was winning seemingly every 50-50 ball. Like, and that's not really to, I would say, bash on Illinois' efforts per se, but it just seemed like everything was coming to Baylor, and then somehow he comes out of the pile with the ball, and not just a jump ball, but he's ripping it out too. That was probably one of my favorite moments from a night that was mainly kind of sad.
Yeah, I mean, it was easily one of my favorite moments of the night, and I thought you kind of touched on it there. There was a stretch there in the second half where I thought Illinois became extremely reactive. There was a situation where you could see, and this happens in basketball for some reason, and if you tell a player, it's just really hard to pinpoint how it happens or why it happens. But there's this, it happens where like the ball will come off the rim, and everyone gets it in their head that they're waiting for the other four guys to grab it, but everyone has that mindset.
Mm-hmm.
And when everyone has that mindset, no one grabs it. And then Baylor ends up getting it. And I thought there were too many instances last night in the second half where guys were waiting for other guys to do things when you just need five guys who are willing to initiate. And a lot of those balls fell into Baylor's lap, just kind of tough rebounds. And there were a couple that when you play on those NBA rims, a long miss will catapult about 19 feet back to the arc. And you got to know those things. And it varies. Like Michigan State's one of those arenas where if you miss a shot long, the ball kind of dies on the rim. But in those NBA arenas, it's amazing when you see a shot that's short or a shot that's long, you got to be ready for that thing to absolutely just shoot off the rim. And I don't expect, Brad Underwood to be sitting there like, hey guys, the ball is going to shoot off the rims when there's misses, but it's something that I've seen over the years, and it just feels like in those games on those NBA floors, for whatever reason, those long rebounds are extremely long.
Yeah, switching topics here a little bit, I want to get talking about Kofi Coburn, because obviously, I was not super impressed with this game last night. And I thought Baylor kind of exploited him. And
say what game? He wasn't out there very long.
Exactly. I know he battled foul trouble early on and then picked up that one right at the beginning of the second half. Is this something, you know, we have to be worried about going forward? Teams, you know, working him over in those high ball screens, you know, for those alley-oops, or was it just the matchup that Baylor possessed?
The one thing I'll say about Kofi, and it's always different for 7-foot centers and for 6'3 guards. When you have a guy that's, you know, the freshman of the year in the Big Ten and all on the all freshman team, you have, there's different ceilings for different guys, and Kofi's ceiling is a little bit lower than a guy that, than a guy like Io in his freshman year, where you're like, man, there's, you know, he can make so much improvement and become, you know, a, you know, first team All-American. Whereas Kofi, like, how much improvement can Kofi really get from year to year? That was the one thing that I saw this year, was like, how much better has he gotten from last year to this year? And you're kind of like, I don't know, like the one thing, and it's not like, hey, I want to see him go from 12 and a half points a game to 18 points. Like, it just doesn't work like that. But what the improvement should be is, okay, he's figured out a little bit in ball screen coverages, right? Okay, he's figured out, you know, when they're getting him off these ball screens, that he has to be active and make those decisions. Like, I'm either going to commit to the ball, or I'm going to make sure my guy isn't rolling to the rim for an alley-oop. So that's the dilemma, I think, that that Coach Underwood, and not only Coach Underwood, a lot of coaches in the country that have these 7-foot big men, as the game is starting to move towards, you know, 4 or 5 guards on the floor, you have these 7-foot big men where you're like, okay, I like our matchup on the offensive end. But on the defensive end, like, what are we willing to give up? Because it's not like Kofi is going to give you 2.5 3-pointers a game or 3 3-pointers a game. So now you're trading 3 for 2 in most of these situations. So they got to find ways to mitigate that. And I thought Georgie was great last night. And I think I made this point last night, but, you know, Georgie was great last night because Kofi had 2 fouls. And when you, and there's a different type of psychology when the guy in front of you is in foul trouble and you know he's done for the half, you know you're not coming out, you know if you make a mistake, you're probably staying in there. So that's part of it too. And but what it will do, regardless of situation, is give Georgie confidence. And the one thing I will give Georgie credit for is the fact that he is always active. And that's something that I think Kofi needs to be better at, is, hey, it's not always going to be pretty. Like, you're not always going to get a clean block shot on the weak side. It's just being smart and being able to pick your battles, because like any other shot blocker, you know, the issue, a weak side shot blocker, right? So when you have Kofi, who, you know, he'll get, obviously he blocked Luka Garza when he was, you know, head up in the Iowa game. But he has a lot of weak side blocks. And the reason why you need to pick those battles is because odds are when you are running over to block a shot on the weak side, you're leaving your guy. And when you leave your guy, those are offensive rebound opportunities. So you better make damn sure that when you go up to block that shot on the weak side, that you block the shot. Because if you don't, then now you have to rely on your teammates to come down and sink and fill. And if that doesn't happen, guys are getting point blank tip-ins and tip dunks. So he just needs to play with a little more, you know, with a little more smarts, to be honest, and figure out a way to continue to be active defensively. And if he can do that, I think this team will take another step, because right now you can see a lot of these teams are pinpointing that and going after him in ball screen coverages. And when you look at last year, I think if you look at, like, if I told you, okay, Illinois, most of the games that they lost had really good scoring lead guards. Nico Mannion, Cassius Winston twice, Anthony Cowan twice, Chris Likes in Miami. And you sit there and you say, oh, wow, that's got to be on our guards. Like, our guards have to guard better. All of those guards are coming off ball screens. And that, so some of that falls on Kofi. And it's not necessarily a knock, because there's so many big men that struggle with it. We were blessed in, when I played at Illinois, to have Nana Egwu, who could cover up everything. Like, he'd switch on a Mello Trimble and level him off and guard him and stuff. And I feel like most of the Illini fans at the time are like, okay, yeah, Nana's averaging 6 and 5, like, whatever, he blocked some shots. Like, he did. He covered up everything defensively for us. And it's like, if you put Nana on this team and you, like, gave Nana Kofi's offensive ability, like, they'd be freaking unbelievable. And So yeah, those are just things that he can work on, and they're things that he can do. He's capable of it. Like, you're not asking him to do anything that's outside of his capability. So if he can shore that up, they'll be cooking with hot grease.
One thing I found interesting last season, a lot of Illini fans didn't like the Georgie Kofi lineup with both those guys in there. But if you look at the points per possession, both offensively and defensively, it was actually one of our better lineups. But I think last night, a team like Baylor is a pretty bad matchup to have both those guys out there, because they play essentially four guards, and like, those guys are running around wreaking havoc. If you don't have mobile bigs, and if you're putting two guys, Georgie's fairly mobile, I'd say, but Kofi, like you said, is, you know, more of a in the paint banger type of big. I think just the matchup last night isn't the best showing for that lineup.
Yeah, I agree. And I think a lot of people, when they think about, okay, we have Georgie and Kofi on the court at the same time, it's not necessarily, okay, who is Georgie going to guard or who is Kofi going to guard? It's that now you have two bigs that are relied on as helpers. And that's the one thing that, you know, you saw at the end of the game yesterday. You know, I think it was a 9-point game. I think Kofi had just hit the free throw to make it 9 with about whatever it was, 3.5 minutes left. And then Jared Butler had the ball on the left wing, left corner, and he was dancing with Georgie. And Georgie did all he could. He got beat. But the problem was, if you have a guard who's the help defender, maybe Trent Frazier slides over and takes a charge. But the help defender was Kofi, and he just didn't make it over. He just couldn't make it over there in time. So those are the things that, from a help defense standpoint, where it becomes extremely difficult, you know, you do kind of like, in certain instances, they love going high-low offensively with Georgie and Kofi. And it's a good recipe at times for a lot of teams, because Georgie can make those passes. Odds are, if they're four guards, the guard has to guard Kofi or has to guard Georgie, and he has, you know, all types of vision to make those passes. So such is life with coaching, man. I mean, it's like you got to kind of take the good with the bad. Like, okay, not every lineup is going to be, you know, not every lineup is going to be the perfect lineup where you're optimizing offensively and defensively. So, you know, that's part of it. Like, you have to find ways to put guys in the best position to be successful and to be as efficient as possible. So, you know, Brett Underwood's a heck of a coach. So it's, you know, I'll never sit there and like question, you know, why, like anyone else does. I mean, any fan does in any sports, not just Illini fans, but, you know, everyone thinks that they have the answer to this has got to be the lineup. And I, you know, I'm sure, Mikey, I'm sure you went through this too. It's like, you know, you see stuff on social media while you're playing football at Illinois or while I'm playing basketball at Illinois, and someone's like, oh, this guy needs to be playing. Like, I won't name names, but like, we had a guy on our team that, you know, you saw all the time on Twitter. It was like, he needs to be playing. I don't know why. What is Gross doing? He needs to play him. It's like, hey, this dude missed practice the other day.
Right. There's so much, like, behind the scenes stuff.
Yeah, there's so much stuff that, like, knows people about. Don't realize. And that's why, like, I realized that, you know, even in the NFL, right? Like, if you question a GM's decision, it's like, hey, odds are he probably knows more than you. Like, he's in the day to day. He knows it. And like, and unless you're like the New York Giants or something, but, but a lot of times that's what you see. And I'll credit Brad Underwood, because he completely changed his coaching philosophy last year. Like, it was the 7 seconds or less when he came in, and he realized, like, you know, to hell with it. We want to win games. So let's play in the 60s. And that's what was best for that team. The good coaches do that. And the not so good coaches say, this is our system. Doesn't matter personnel, you know, roll the ball out and let's figure it out. He was able to adapt. And I think that shows, his ability to coach. So I guess my long winded way of saying, going all the way back, like, that lineup, it's good in instances. It's not good in certain instances, but you could say that about virtually every lineup that you put on the floor.
I think the big story here is Michael Tulip telling on himself that he was missing practice because he was finding people on Twitter calling for him to get out there, and he couldn't tell them, hey, man, I was missing a couple practices here and there. Gross, I mean, bench me.
I don't think – correct me if I'm wrong. I don't think they were calling for me to play, that's for sure.
Listen, you're the one who was on Twitter.
That's true. That's true. So I don't know. I mean, it's just one of those things, man, where – like you said, Mikey, like, there's so many behind the scenes things that people don't understand, like, within a program. And I'm like sitting there like, oh, I want to just tweet at this guy and be like, hey, man, you have no idea what's going on.
Right.
Have you ever come pretty close to firing off a tweet like that? Just being like, you don't know anything. I'm been at every practice.
Dude, I had, all right, so quick, like, I'll make it short, but quick story time. So my junior year, I'd like worked my ass off to crack the rotation. So finally Gross comes up to me, hey man, you're playing tonight. Cool. We're playing Purdue at home. And I'm sitting there and I'm like, all right, get in, it's first half, and baseline out of bounds. They're running a certain play. I think I was guarding John Octius, who freak athlete. Maybe not the best matchup for me, but I mean, in the Big Ten, that's who you're going to guard. So Matt Painter sees me check in, and whatever play he called, the baseline out of bounds, he changed it. whatever it was, I knew it was coming to me. Mm-hmm. So I'm sitting there, and that's why Matt Painter's a good coach, because I think he knew what I was going to do. And they enter the ball on the opposite wing, and they start swinging it over. Now they go into a dribble handoff with John Octius. He probably knew that, like, you know, short white kid gets in there, wants to lay it on the line. I'm going to try to blow up that handoff. Like, I'm going to go try to steal the ball in the handoff. It was designed for a back door. So I go to blow it up. John Octius cuts back door and dunks it. I had just worked my tail off to get in the rotation. First play, I come in, I get backdoored for a dunk. And, you know, whatever it was, minute and a half later, I get subbed out, basically didn't play the rest of the season. But I remember I was just like, after the game, man, I was like so dejected. And there's just like so many people like that were flooding my mentions like, you don't deserve the jersey, bro. Like, da da da, like you suck. But like, I heard it all the time. And, but it's like, I want to fire off and be like, come watch a practice, bro. Like yeah. You know what I mean? It's,
1-on-1 right now.
Yeah, 1v1, man.
Oh, dude, you would not believe how many kids DM me while I was at Illinois wanting to play 1-on-1. Like regular students, I'm like, bro.
Did you keep a list? Like you should have just kept a
hit list.
I still remember this kid's because he hit me up all the time. He's like, oh, let's do it, bro. Then all of a sudden, he was a practice player for the women's team, and I was like, is this guy just trying to like infiltrate the facility?
He wants to be you so badly.
I'm like, dude, we could play 1-on-1. I don't really know what's in it for me. Yeah. If I beat you, it's like expected. And you know, if by some stretch of the imagination, you beat me, like what was I, like what I, like it's a lose-lose.
Here's my jersey.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. I, going back to your Twitter thing, when I was going through my injuries, dude, I used to have people tweet me all the time. Like just making fun of me for like my knees and it hurts and you want to like respond to them, you know, and be like F you and all this stuff, but you can't, you know, cause ultimately you'll be the one that gets in trouble. Nobody knows who that person is. So it's tough to hold back, but you know, I think it builds character. It gives you thick skin, especially now that I'm a few years removed, you know, you just worry not to sweat the little things as much.
We had a Twitter ban my freshman year. And actually ended up winning 6 games in a row after it. So we had lost like maybe 5 or 6 in Big Ten play. So this is 2012, 2013, the year we went to the tournament. And, you know, like we won the Maui, we were ranked 10th in the country, beat Gonzaga. And then like we hit this cold patch in Big Ten play. And we were just hearing it from Illini fans.
Yeah.
Tyler Griffey's going back at him. Brandon Paul's going back at him. Like, Gross is like showing these tweets in the film room.
Oh man.
Tyler Griffey, like someone's like telling Tyler Griffey he sucks, and Tyler Griffey's like calling him a 41-year-old pedophile. And I'm like, and Gross is like, we can't be saying this stuff, guys. Like, you guys are way too invested with what everyone's saying. Like, we're shutting down Twitter, like, no Twitter for the rest of the season. And we won like 6 straight. Like, no one was tweeting, doing anything. And it's just, it's amazing, man. You start to see like kind of, and you had mentioned it, Mikey, like people don't get it. Like, it's like, you're still like a human being. Like it's like you have feelings. Play for Illinois and whatnot, but, and everyone always asks me, they're like, oh man, like what was Brandon Paul like as a teammate? I'm like, I don't know, man. Like, we just like listened to Blink-182 and like hung out, and he's just like a normal human being. Like, it's so funny, dude. But yeah, you're right. Like, there starts to become like a, like a really weird, like gross kind of like saw that it was becoming an issue. Because Brandon was ruthless. Brandon would make you like, if you said something like out of line, Brandon would make you probably like crawl into a hole and want to die. Like he was, so we had to just shut it down, but that was just, and it worked. So I don't know. It's one of those things with Twitter. And this is why I think a lot of kids that come to Illinois, like you love the attention. Like you love that you gain all these followers and whatnot. But like when you open yourself up to the good, you also open yourself up to the bad. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure you had teammates that, you know, it's a struggle for some kids that,
oh, yeah.
you know, that can't take that, you know, someone just straight up like telling you suck. Mm-hmm. I mean, dude, I didn't play that much. And like people were tweeting at me and it's like, that sucks. Like it doesn't feel good. I mean, right. like, you can say all you want, but like when you're 19 years old, mm-hmm. Like how do you take that? I checked into the Norfolk State game my freshman year. I had just gotten a buzz cut, no facial hair. And this guy from like the A section or like he was a season ticket holder, had to be over 60 years old. And he yells out, it was a free throw. So it was dead quiet. And I was checking in and this dude yells out, I hear him stand up and yell out, why the hell are we putting in a 12-year-old? I turn around and I look and I'm checking in. Like, I feel like the whole arena heard it.
Yeah.
And it was
yeah.
And I'm checking in. I'm like, dude, these are like my own fans.
Right.
Like, or like, I guess our own fans. You know what I mean? It was just like, and then you just realize as you get older, you're like, who cares?
Right.
Like, you're like that, like anyone who's sending those tweets, like they send the tweet and then they put the phone down and go like make dinner. And it's just like such a small part of their day. Meanwhile, you're sitting there like, you mother.
like ready to fight them through the phone.
It's crazy, man.
Don't you just want to like Google their name, pull up their high school highlight tapes or lack thereof, and just like, oh, you averaged 2 points at
like the Skip Bayless.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to say, how much of it makes you then want to like go out and then just chuck a three and then look right at that guy and just point him at him and be like, all right, yeah, buddy,
That's what sucked, because like, I played so sparingly that I couldn't even like defend myself. You know what I mean? Like, it was like, I couldn't play enough to prove anybody wrong or whatever. So it's just like, well, you know, I'll check in here for the last, you know, minute and a half of the game and
get berated.
You know, hopefully like this three that I'm going to chuck from the right wing, you know, goes in and I can like save face. But you know, just one of those things, as you get older, you're like, take the experiences. And as you're done, you're like, yeah, it was more about the relationships you build anyways than all the games that you play and points you score and whatnot. So
when you take a step back to it, it just seems weird, like a 60-year-old guy yelling at a 19-year-old kid playing a game, like taking it that seriously. Like,
oh, dude, it's crazy. Team, like, but I mean, if I looked over and that was like Lou Henson, I'd be like, you know what, Lou? You're right. But
we're like, respect, Lou.
Yeah, respect.
No, you know what, Lou? You're wrong.
Yeah, you know what? Yeah, exactly. So I don't know, man. It's like, it's so funny when you look at it from that like granular level and you're just like, oh, that's just a guy that took time to drive to that game to yell at me for whatever reason, like of all people, you know what I mean?
I mean, that's why they call it fandom. It's literally a derivative of fanaticism. So that's, you got to expect that at a certain point.
You have to.
Should we get into maybe a couple questions? I think we put out a tweet to get a couple questions for you that I'll ask you. And the first one is, what's your favorite flower?
Someone actually tweeted that.
No, yeah, I was tagged. I saw it.
Yeah.
I've been mulling it over all day.
maybe I mean, a rose
the
guy?
The easy answer is a tulip, but.
Mm.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah, me too.
I don't know. I mean, I could be a daisy guy. You know what I mean? Like, it's but I feel like I have to go tulip. Like it's just kind of a rite of passage.
Yeah. Here's a question I was asked that I wanted to get your take on. Someone had asked me who's Illinois' strongest defender this year. And I was thinking about it and I'm like, years past, I think there's been more of a clear answer. So I think it's a good problem to have, but I'd said DeMonte Williams is a pretty lockdown guy. Trent Frazier did a really good job last year and it's really committed to the defensive role. And then Adam Miller, I think, was a USA basketball camp defensive MVP or something a couple years, summers back. And Io DeSumo is a great defender. So who in your eyes is the best Illinois defender this season?
I think it's Demonte. And honestly, this year he's had, Ohio game, he's got to guard Ben Vanderplas, who's a 6'8", back you down, hit threes. Like that's not an easy matchup for Demonte. And then you talk about Vital last night, who's like, I thought for a second, I was like, has anyone seen that guy and Lamar Stevens in the same room?
Yeah.
It makes you think, man. And he's just a bully. And those are two back-to-back games where Demonte at, you know, whatever he is, 6'3", 6'4". He has extremely long arms, but like he's given up a lot of height and he's given up a lot of weight. And I thought he's done a good job. And I think that's Brad Underwood's way of saying that that's their best defender is, you know, you can stick him on multiple guys. And for the most part, I thought Trent was fantastic last year. The one thing that it's almost like different areas of the game, there's different best defenders. If you want to talk about who just refuses to get screened, that's Trent Frazier. I don't think I've ever seen a guy that he refuses to be screened. And then Adam Miller on the flip side of that last night, I think Adam Miller is a great on the ball defender. He actually has this innate ability to level guys off, by beating them to the spot. And that's where Andre Curbelo can get better, because Andre Curbelo's way of leveling you off is getting into your body. And when you're that undersized, it becomes more of a collision. And when it becomes a collision, it's a foul. And that's why he's seen some foul trouble. But with Adam Miller, he's had the ability to level guys off and use his body in a way that's just, you know, hands straight up and not creating a collision because he's so solid. But the one thing that he could do is watch Trent Frazier get through ball screens. Because last night, Adam Miller and actually Kendrick Nunn used to do this all the time, where instead of getting small and getting tight and getting around it, Kendrick used to always long stride and like extend his leg out to get around the screen. But when the angle gets changed, all you're doing is just extending your leg into the screen, and now you have no movement. And that's kind of what Adam did last night a couple times, where he'd like extend his foot out to try to get around it. But by the time he did that, he was just running into the screen. And obviously with a guy like Kofi and Georgie, who, you know, they're good ball screen defenders at times, but maybe not great. Like, you have to get through those screens, or else you're putting way too much pressure on them and these guys going downhill. So I think it's a loaded question, to be honest. There's a lot of guys that you could say, you know, on any given night are their best defender, which is a good problem to have. I mean, I thought they showed that graphic maybe before the Ohio game, there was like, hey, Big Ten players, we'll ask you a question. Who's the toughest? Who's the hardest, you know, player to score on? And it was like four Illini guys.
Yeah, so. Four of the five were Illini.
Yeah, which is awesome.
All right, I got to interject before we get to another question, because you obviously saw enough like scouting reports in your time. How is it, talking about Trent and his defensive prowess, how is it that not every single scouting report says, okay, if you're on a fast break and it's a two-on-one, three-on-one, it doesn't even matter if it's just a one-on-one, you versus Trent Frazier, he's going to try and take a charge. Why don't you just jump stop or go for a pull-up jumper? It's awesome because obviously he draws those calls, but I'm like sitting there watching like how this team is so good. How do they not know that if number one is the only defender back, that he's going to try and take a charge on you?
It's weird, man. In those moments, it's, and honestly, there, I guarantee you that, Drew probably was, Coach Drew was probably, I guarantee you we mentioned that in the scout. But when you steal the ball or when you have a pass up ahead to you on the fast break, I'm not even sure at times you're processing, this is Trent Frazier's number one, this is the guy that takes charges. Because all you're thinking at that point is like, all right, let me try to get to the rim and score. It happens so fast, and especially at that level and especially at that pace of play. It's like there's no time to think, because the thing that I used to do in college, because I was giving up so much size, and this is actually what I think Andre Curbelo could start doing a little bit since he's given up a little bit of size, is cutting off angles to take charges on the ball. So all you have to do at Curbelo's size is have one good slide in front to cut the guy off, and I promise you, they will do the rest of it and lower their shoulder into you, and you will get a charge. I think Trent's Trent's the same way. He's so good off the ball, but he's steady enough and has a good enough core on the ball where he doesn't really need to take charges on the ball. But you're right. It is something where if I'm looking in the outside, looking in, like, how do they not know that he's always going to take these charges? But, like, it's so bang-bang that, like, it's hard to think about that in the moment.
All right, here's another question from former Indiana shooting guard Nick Zeisloft. He wants to know, who's the best full package elite alumni shooter, and why is it Nick Zeisloft?
Do you know Nick?
I do know Nick. He's my neighbor.
Oh, God, man. Nick's my guy.
Mike's like, what the hell?
Yeah, that's a name I haven't heard in decades.
I knew you guys played together, so I got him to give me a question.
He's well, it's me, first of all. and
respect the confidence.
And Nick knows that. I think deep down Nick knows that. I'm not sure Nick and I have ever done like a head-to-head like 3-point battle. I mean, right now he's still playing professionally, but I like to think that I could still walk out there and hold my own, if not beat him. But yeah,
seems like we should set that up.
Yeah, well,
yeah, I feel like that's
sponsored by the Field Pass.
Once he comes back, yeah, once he comes back stateside, he might actually be back.
He is back. I just talked to him a couple days ago.
Well, there you go. I mean, if he wants to come down to Nashville, or I'll come up to wherever he is, Willow Springs or whatever.
LaGrange,
yeah.
We'll make it work.
Yeah, I mean, long story short, I'm going to go with myself on that one.
Have you been staying on the court? Do you play a lot, or you?
Yeah, you in any rec leagues?
Well, it was funny. I play, so we actually had a quick rec league story. So I was in a rec league like as soon as I got done playing. Like it was like the first. It was like that winter. After I was done playing, and we played the first game, and it was me. So our team was actually, we had a kid that played at Penn State, 6'10" center.
Jeez.
And we were in like a pretty decent league, and we played that first game. And, this is my issue because like, I don't have the patience for like the guys that I don't want to say like, aren't very good, but it's like, if you tell me that you want to play and like you want to win games, I don't care if it's a rec league, better play like it. so like we play this first game and me and this six, I mean, we won like 108-60. Like I think I had 42 and the big dude had 35 and I was like we're coming up ball screens. I was throwing lobs. Like it was a joke. And then the next game, some random dude shows up, like some random dude. And he's like, and I could see, and he didn't play with me in the game before. And I'm like coming down, coming off ball screens, popping threes. And like every time I did something, throws his hand. Oh, this kid's shooting again. He's like freaking out. I'm like, dude, who are you? And it got to the point at the end of the game. So it was a close game. I think we were down maybe 2 or 4 towards the end of the game. And I made it a point the last 3 minutes of the game, I would dribble down and pass it to him every time. I would basically sabotage the game. I pass it to him. I'm like, go ahead, bro. Like, do your thing. He's dribbling off his foot out of bounds. He's shooting it off the backboard. And I look at him. I go, that's why I didn't give you the ball. And he goes, oh, boy. And I looked at my buddy who like basically – like told me to join the team, and I was like, if this dude comes back, I'm not playing.
Yeah.
And he was like, and this guy was like, oh yeah, bro. I'm just like, and that was my like last rec league experience. I'm like, I can't do it anymore. I have like PTSD from rec leagues, but I'd still get in. Like when I was in Dayton, I would go into the Wright State facility and me and their point guard who actually just graduated, like we would work out like every day. So yeah, I mean, I think I still got it.
Yeah. Is there a rule in TBT? Can coaches sub themselves in?
I mean, I'm smart enough to not do that. it was funny, they actually, because we brought 7 guys to that tournament or 8 guys to that tournament, and we actually, when we got there, had like a borderline positive test scare. So I'm like, shoot, we may be down to 7. The TBT printed like a like an emblem, like a, or like a, like a La Tulip, thing where like if in emergency they need to like stick it on a jersey. So they hit me up. They're like, we made like a thing for the back of like the jersey if we need it. I'm like, I hope to God it doesn't come to that point, because I just want to see these guys play. I'm gonna leave it to the professionals, man. Like that Carmen's Crew game was just such high level basketball. Like I couldn't even fathom going in there and just like absolutely probably shredding my Achilles, and like it was just a whole nother level of basketball. And I can put my pride aside now and be like, you know what? I'll leave it to these guys.
You got any good recruits lined up for next year's tournament? Are you not allowed to disclose that?
Yeah. I don't want to, jump the gun here, but there are two players that did not play on our team last year that have relayed to me that they are going to play this year. Two players that Illinois fans will know very well. And I'll probably just leave it at that.
Okay.
I don't want to jinx it, because they're two really good players. And I think if you dig hard enough, you could probably figure out who it is.
Yeah. I'm hoping one of them's Darren Williams and the other one's Stephen Bardo. No, I don't know. Come up with some random old names. But
I will break some news that it is neither of those guys.
Okay.
But I would love Darren to be
breaking news here on the field pass.
No, I would love Darren to be a part of it in some capacity. And I think he may want to. We'll see. Like I that's why the first year was so important, because when I was recruiting for it, when I was trying to get funding for it, you're like pitching this thing that has not happened.
Right.
And like, you're sitting there hoping like, all right, well, I'm pretty sure we have a really good team. Let's see what happens. Like we went out for the War Tampa game and I was like, I think we're pretty good. Like, let's see. And it's just like, I remember sitting in my hotel room, like, and I like, you know, an hour and a half before the game, like, dude, I've just put 10 months into this. And it all comes down to this single elimination freaking game tonight on ESPN. And it's like, I think I was more nervous for that game than like any time in my career playing or doing any of that. It was crazy. And then once like the first 2 minutes of the War Tampa game, I was like, all right.
We got Mike Dom fine. On our team. So
you got the Dominator.
We're good. We got the Dominator. We're good.
I have a final Twitter question from at user XTC25. And his question is, which is better, South or Wayside, and why is it Wayside?
So a reputable source, user XTY or whatever it is.
XJ720.
XJ, okay.
It doesn't matter.
I mean, what year are we talking? I think we...
Listen, all I know is that I was undefeated against South at Wayside.
All I know is...
pull back the curtain.
All I know is we beat Wayside by 40. So, I mean, and that was the year that we, do you know Brian Nelms?
Do I know Brian Nelms? Of course I know Brian Nelms.
I am Brian Nelms.
me and Brian Nelms were the backcourt to a South middle school team that was 22-1.
Illinois Wesleyan's Brian Nelms.
Illinois Wesleyan's very own. 2012 MSL Conference Player of the Year, Brian Nelms.
That's true. That is one thing that Wayside, and to pull back the curtain a little bit, because people are probably listening to this wondering what the hell are these guys talking about. So I am also from, yes, Mikey raised
that is me.
He is those people listening. Yes. So Michael Tulip is from the great city of Arlington Heights, Illinois, which is where your boy John Bales is also from. And we went to competing, well, not really competing. I went to a private, he went to a public.
If I looked out my window in science class in seventh grade, I could see your school. Basically.
Yes. Yes. Okay. And when I was
not
walking to school,
I literally could see it.
I know some guy, when we would go out to recess, we would see some folks over there at South and
stare down. Oh yeah.
You saw Jimmy Garoppolo playing flag football in gym class.
I mean, maybe
chucking
not.
Chucking bombs.
But all I know is that when for my year we were undefeated against South every year that we played, so I don't really know.
They didn't have
this 40-point game is coming from, but
we worked Wayside, absolutely worked Wayside. But I will say to go back to the Jimmy Garoppolo, for the people that don't know about Jimmy Garoppolo's middle school days, he was exactly as tall as he is right now.
Oh, wow.
In about sixth grade, Jimmy Garoppolo was 6'3". Jeez. And was just tearing
also
up
the
Jimmy.
Pride of Arlington Heights.
Also the pride of Arlington Heights. Yeah, yeah. Rolling Meadows own. Unbelievable.
Well, thank you for answering that riveting question about a random Northwest suburb in Chicago that I'm sure everyone is just dying to hear about.
South Middle School. I mean, to give you a final answer, it's South Middle School.
It's definitely way. Actually, how many hours did you put in at Pioneer? You were talking about Rec.
Pioneer?
Pioneer Park, yeah. How many? Oh, yeah. I gotta ask. How many hours did you put in there?
Numerous.
Do you remember the old gym? That's the true test of your Arlington.
I remember the old gym before they completely revamped it or renovated it, if you will. And then the outdoor court's pretty sick too.
Oh yeah, many a game, many a backwards tennis baseball game played on those courts. But that's not why you called.
Sure.
We'll definitely take this to Twitter. We'll throw a Twitter poll out there. See what
South, South versus Wayside.
We got a huge crowd, Arlington Heights crowd following. So
we'll see whose Q rating is higher. And I gotta believe it's me because everyone in the Illini fandom universe knows who John Bayless is, right?
That's right.
I don't know if we really put it out there to the South Middle School Wayside crowd, that's just more traffic to the podcast. That's all I'm saying.
It is.
I mean, I'm going to be hitting up everyone. I'm going to talk to people I haven't talked to in decades to get them to vote for that.
Yeah, I'll hit up my South Middle School guys. I actually had a kid text me today from South Middle School who I haven't talked to in probably 15 years that was like, "Hey man, tough loss last night." I was like, "How have you been, man?"
Like, yeah. Nice to talk to you.
I was like, geez, man, like, how's the family, first of all?
I've been waiting 15 years to text you this.
God, I've been, yeah, the buildup. You talk about the buildup to that game. Yeah, I did not expect to text from that kid.
Illini basketball just runs that deep, apparently.
That's right. It is. It absolutely runs deep.
All right, let's leave it there. Mike LaTulip, thanks for joining us.
Appreciate it, guys.